This week's episode of The Sun on the Strip is presented by Greenspun Media Group. Thanks for joining me. I'm Brock Radke, entertainment writer and columnist for the Las Vegas Sun, and I'm here every Wednesday to give you an update on all the entertainment news from the world-famous Las Vegas Strip, plus an exclusive conversation with someone you know or need to know in Vegas showbiz. Whole lot of huge entertainment news broke last week just as this show was coming out on Wednesday. I did reference the Resorts World commercial that came out on Thursday, essentially announcing its four resident headliners, who are, of course, Celine Dion, Katy Perry, Carrie Underwood, and Luke Bryan. Four music superstars that do not have announced dates at the new casino just yet, but we are expecting that info to be rolled out in the coming months. Resorts World opens on June 24th on the Strip. The other big announcements from last week, old news now, but still significant. EDC was postponed yet again and will now take place in October at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And Cirque du Soleil confirmed which shows it will open first. Mystère at Treasure Island on June 28th and O at Bellagio on July 1st. I actually spoke with Cirque du Soleil CEO Daniel Lamar last week and wrote a big story about what it will be like for these iconic and huge shows to reopen very soon. Go check that out and find all those other news items to catch up on at lasvegassun.com. Click on that entertainment tab at the top of the homepage to find all the latest articles from yours truly. This week, two of my favorite resident headliners also announced their comebacks. Bruno Mars will be the first major returning residency on Las Vegas Boulevard when he comes back to Park Theater at Park MGM in July. And Carlos Santana will bring his live lead jam session of a residency back to the House of Blues at Mandalay Bay in August. And the newest resident has added dates to his show, Usher, who will start up in July at the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace. He added six shows in August, so now he has 17 concerts planned for 2021 at Caesars, with an extra one on January 1st, 2022. He's not the only one. Grupo Infirme added a second night to the band's Mexican Independence Day weekend concert at MGM Grand Garden Arena on September 11th. The show on September 10th sold out very quickly. And Dave Chappelle, who's headlining a comedy show on July 2nd at MGM Grand Garden Arena, is now coming back the following week to pair up with Joe Rogan on July 9th, also at the Grand Garden Arena. One more new concert announcement. Mark Anthony's new tour will visit Mandalay Bay's Michelob Ultra Arena on October 23rd, and tickets for that one go on sale this Friday. So we are definitely seeing that pent-up demand for big live entertainment in Las Vegas. Expect to see more new show announcements, more reopening announcements, and lots of sold-out events coming to the Strip throughout the summer. Let's talk comedy. Harrah's has had several shows with comedy involved, running simultaneously for years now, but the Center Strip Resort's main comedy headliner since 2018 has been John Caparulo, originally from Ohio, and one of the guys that kind of broke through on the scene as part of the second wave of that blue-collar comedy touring lineup. Cap, as he's known, has been on hold since March as far as his Harrah's show goes, but he's hit the road here and there to keep the laughs going, and he's found a new temporary home in Las Vegas at The Space and customized a completely new and highly interactive performance for the venue. He's back on stage there on May 11th, and you can find tickets for the in-person show or watch it via live stream from your own home by going to thespacelv.com. Cap is talking with me this week all about that show, as well as his new web animation project and how all this COVID stuff has changed his act and his approach. Here's my conversation with John Caparulo. So how many shows have you done so far at The Space?
We just did the second one, so two. Yeah, we did the first one in March, and then we just did the second one last week.
Did you change things up a lot for these shows because of the live stream factor, and what's that been like?
Well, yeah, that's kind of why, like, the whole concept for the show, it's called Uncapped Comedy, because we decided we always do some play on cap, which is pretty corny, but what else are we going to do? But it's essentially the format of the show was, because I knew, yeah, it wasn't like I was going to be able to go do, you know, a new hour every month of stand up. So it was kind of a thing that I'd wanted to try for a long time, which was, you know, uncapped. We passed the hat around to the audience, the live audience, and they write down topic suggestions. We try to keep it 5 words or less from everybody, and they put in their suggestions, and then I go up on stage and wing it. And it's really fun because it's interactive and the audience feels invested in it, and it's fun for me because I get to just sort of, you know, as an artist, just you know, see where it goes. And and the cool thing for me is if the show sucks, it's their fault. So it's, it works out.
It's always good to have a scapegoat, especially in comedy.
Yeah, of course, I need one. But yeah, it's the reason why we came up with that is to, you know, to make it so the virtual show will be for the most part different. I mean, somebody's always going to suggest something about like anal sex or something. So there's always going to be some topics that get repeated each time. So we're trying to work out the kinks with that, like as far as like maybe we're going to target different groups as far as like the live audience each time to make it so like we just have like different points of view out there in the audience each time. But it's I've always, as a comic, I've always enjoyed the challenge of, you know, I love doing something new and different that I haven't talked about before. And, you know, for me, like I've always sort of had a way with my standup where I just sort of weave everything together to make it seem like, it, you know, everything is sort of like one topic leads to the other. And with this format, it's like the gloves are off. It's like, okay, we're going to do this right now. And then what's next? And they don't have to fit together at all because of the format. So it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Now, did you do any other, I guess, virtual shows over the last year with a online only audience?
When the shutdowns first started last year, I've been working on an animated project for 6 years, 7 years, but I can't draw, so that's why it's kind of slow. But I've been wanting to essentially turn myself and my stand-up comedy into a cartoon for a while, and you know, with everything, with live audiences being illegal at the time, it was like, okay, well, it's kind of perfectly adaptable to the situation. So I contacted a really talented animator named Seth Feinberg that I'd gotten in touch with over some other stuff before. Actually worked on some ads for us for Harrah's, and I basically recorded stand up in my bathroom and I put a bunch of soundproofing pads up and just recorded stand up at home, you know, all new stuff, essentially just, you know, whatever I could come up with each time. And what do we do? 4 of those. And we call them the same as the show title, Cartoon Comic. And we put them on YouTube and Facebook and my website. So they're about 3-4 minutes each. So it's all like, it's cartoon. It's me as a cartoon character doing stand up for essentially nobody, no audience. So we put a musical track underneath it and everything. It's a unique approach to stand up. So yeah, check them out.
Yeah. And it's a great pivot to do this year, because I've heard some pretty terrible stories from comedians who have done these Zoom shows, and
yeah,
it kind of sounds like the worst possible thing ever.
Yeah. It's a, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, for me, you know, we were approached by one or two people about that, you know, promoters essentially. And, it just seemed sad. And it seemed like the type of thing that I would feel bad about taking people's money for that, because I'd feel like, you know, it's just, it's not the right setting. And it would do all of us a disservice. For me, I think other guys can score with it. I need some sort of, you know, energy. Or in the, you know, with the animation, I felt like it gives you more of a show, something to watch, you know? And, that's why we were trying to, you know, it took us a while, like with the uncapped comedy thing, but we're trying to figure out a way to do a virtual show that was, you know, that we felt like was worth paying for a ticket for and watching. So I feel like we found that.
obviously stand-up comedians, if you've got to the level that you are at, you've been through the ringer, you've played all over the place, you've probably played crazy venues that stand-up comedians should never be able to play. So you're definitely a resilient bunch, but I feel like these virtual shows are kind of like, that's the line.
it really is. It kind of makes you doing a show like that and basically it's like me and you, this is a conversation. It's not a show. And having this sort of setting, it really kind of makes you miss those really terrible bar gigs that you started out doing. Yeah, so.
This is not the first time that I've been on a Zoom with somebody and they wished that they were at a crappy bar instead of talking to me.
It's not you personally, though.
How long have you been performing in Las Vegas now?
Vegas, well, I've been coming here for years, you know, like I did, let's see, back like in the early, mid 2000s, I used to go do the Riviera, like at least once a year. And then I went to South Point quite a bit for a while. That's where I recorded my, my last 1 hour special actually. And then what was it? Late 2017, we got the call from Harrah's and, we started in May of 2018. We started doing the residency show at Harrah's and went all the way up until March 15th of last year. So, and we hope that resumes. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. My poster is still up outside the place. So I think they haven't totally given up on the idea of that. So that's a plus. That's a plus.
Yeah, you're still on the website. So seems like you're there.
So yeah, they're you know, I think they still have the intent of bringing the show back when they start bringing, you know, all the others back. So I would love to get back to it because the first couple of weeks was a nice just like, oh yeah, I can hang out, but it started to feel pretty weird after a while. Just don't feel like yourself. So
yeah, I bet. It seems like there's been a little bit of a comedy boom in recent years in Vegas with some exciting new clubs opening, like the Comedy Cellar finally came to Vegas at the Rio, and you got Jimmy Kimmel's pretty close to where you are,
right next door.
From your perspective in the comedy community, does it feel like Vegas is an even more desirable destination?
Absolutely. I think, for the first couple of years that I was here, I mean, but you're right. Yeah. There's been more clubs popping up. So that it seems like there's more, there's more of a scene because when you have multiple venues that, you know, as a comic, you could, you know, if you're not under contract, you could still make your way around to, and it creates a scene and it creates a really cool vibe for just an energy for comedy to have it in a lot of places. And it, like I said, then it attracts more comics and it attracts developing comics too. So, cause I don't think before really the past couple of years, I don't think somebody could like take Vegas as a place to get started really. You know, it wasn't a place that you could really, you know, find a lot of places because most places are, it's like they have headliners and it's a, you know, but when you have a lot of different places and a lot of different comics, it creates a scene and it also creates an artistic colony vibe that really, it's really essential to developing comics and really at all stages of the game. So I think that's, awesome. And I also think that, with everything that's happened over this past year, a lot more comics have come here since LA closed. So it's like there's a lot of comedians that are going to either Vegas or Austin, it seems like, and Nashville. So, but I like it that, just the artistic energy is really picking up here. And I think that's definitely a positive.
When you were, you know, headed down this road, when you were thinking of doing comedy, were your like early influences and inspirations, were those stand-up comedians or did you get more, were you impacted more by like things on TV and in movies and stuff like that? Or what inspired you initially?
When I was really young, you know, 7, 8 years old, I loved Eddie Murphy. Like my parents would let me, like, they'd either let me stay up, or we had our beta VCR at the time. We would record SNL when he was on SNL. And I remember I was 9 years old, and my dad took me to see Beverly Hills Cop after that. Like, my parents went and saw it and made sure. I don't know what would have been, would have made it not okay. But yeah, I mean, cause yeah, it's like, there's pretty much everything that you could possibly not want your 9 year old to see in that movie. But my dad took me to see it, cause I was such a big fan of Eddie Murphy. And then, once I got into like high school, and, you know, there was, you know, all the rock star comics, like Kinison and Dice Clay and guys like that. I was, you know, buying their albums and stuff like that when I was young. But you know, and then, you know, my comedy itself was always influenced the most by, like, with the Simpsons and like Family Guy and American Dad, South Park. I'm sure my 5 year old and I are enjoying South Park together. Actually, I'm passing the baton of corrupting youth with really raunchy cartoons. But it's stuff like that. It has always been the thing that I feel like influences my sort of comedic voice a lot. And then when I went to LA in my after I finished college, you know, developing at a place like the Comedy Store, where I, you know, was around, you know, just great comics like, you know, Eddie Griffin and you know, Chris Rock, and just a lot of, you know, great guys that, you know, maybe most people haven't heard of, you know, like a guy like Freddie Soto or something like that. Just really some really great comics.
Eddie Griffin is one of my all-time favorites, and a lot of people don't realize that he's been living in Vegas for a long time, and
he had
that really long residency at the Rio before he more recently had been at the Sahara and stuff like that. But
legend to me. The guy who opens for him, Thomas Ward, is a good friend of mine too, and I've seen him actually. We were doing this show down at Neonopolis actually for a little while the past few months. So yeah. He said that they had moved, but they were starting back up soon, or maybe they already restarted actually.
Well, it looks like things are getting back to normal pretty quickly in Vegas. You know, we just, this last week, Clark County put some new plans out and stuff like that. And everybody's hoping that June 1 is kind of the big day when the shows that haven't been able to open will at least have the ability to get back. So hopefully we'll see you this summer at Harrah's once again.
Definitely.
When that happens and you're doing a lot of shows every week like you used to, do you think that you're going to have a lot of pandemic material to use, or do you think that people are going to want to kind of put this behind them and just go on with their lives?
Well, I already do have, like, I've been having to go out on the road a little bit, you know, lately, over the past like 6-8 months. And, you know, it was kind of a thing. I remember when it was 4 months. I went from March until July. It was late July when I actually did my first shows. I went back to Cleveland and at a club called Hilarities there. And I remember I was scared to death going on stage, because I can listen to a recording in my set or something like that, but it's not the same as actually, you know, knowing it in your bones. And being able to, you know, just let it go naturally. And I hadn't taken 4 months off in 23 years at that point. And the thing was like, you know, when I walked on stage, it's not like, you know, if I had taken 4 months off myself because I, you know, had some sort of personal issue or whatever, I would have been able to just walk back on stage and just go, okay, you know, let me just start back doing my same set that I was doing in March. But it's not like that, because we all took all that time off. The world changed in that time, and it's still changing. You can't just ignore the elephant in the room. My job as a comedian is kind of to you know, acknowledge reality. So if I were to, you know, not do something, you know, to act like this whole craziness hasn't fallen on all of us, well, then that's not a real show. So yeah, I've been really, since I started back like last July and going on the road, I pretty much like the first like 10 minutes of my set is related to all this. Cause you know, we live in this different world and we got to talk about it. Cause that's why we're here to laugh. Cause it's the only way to get through this crap.
Yeah. What's it been like to have that interaction with an audience again, even if it's a smaller audience? What's it been like to just be back in front of people again?
Well, you know, obviously like the numbers are going up as more places are, you know, loosening their restrictions on that and everything. But, you know, as far as the size of the crowd itself, it you know, it affects obviously the club and the ticket sales and all that stuff. But when you get down to it, it's like, you know, if they were socially distanced and everything, it really, in a lot of ways, made people actually a little bit more relaxed, to be honest, because they didn't have anybody shoulder to shoulder with them, and they can sort of just spread out. So you know, the size of the crowds didn't really hurt the comedy at all. It had its own charm, which was fun. It just, you know, it's obvious, like, you know, as a, from the business side of comedy, I think that's where it became more of a problem, but it was great for me. And then just, you know, the people who came out, I think they were, especially after the show, when you talk to them, a lot of them are like grateful that, you know, they could have the opportunity to come out and laugh again and feel, because it really is a big deal. And it's, as a comedian, when you do it all the time, you don't think of it this way, because it's just, it's your job, your career, it's something that's second nature. But when you hear from people how really just important it was for them to be able to go out and have this, you know, normal experience again, it's really cool to, when somebody brings that to my attention, it's awesome. So yeah, comedy is a good thing. It really is. It's something that, because like I said, when you do it as your career, becomes your career, and you just become used to it, and you're just like, well, you know, because I, you know, deep down, I think I suck. So I'm like, you know, I hope these people don't hate me at the end of this. And you know, you realize though afterward how really happy it does make people, and it's really an important thing, and I'm glad I get to do it.
Okay, who wants to have fun this weekend? Let me give you my picks for live entertainment in Las Vegas over the next few days. Speaking of the space, you have to go to the Little Theater off the Strip at Polaris and Harmon to see Original Chaos perform the entire Eagles album Hotel California on Friday at 8 p.m. You can live stream that one too if you can't make it. It's at thespacelv.com. Those guys seriously rock and are worth checking out. Earlier than that, on Thursday, and then rolling into the weekend, the amazing Matt Franco reopens his show at The Link, Magic Reinvented Nightly, and he's revamped the whole thing. I can't wait to see the new pieces he's been working on in recent months, and I know he's going to keep the show as interactive as possible in some fun and creative ways. He's on at 7 p.m. Thursday through Monday, plus 9:30 p.m. Saturday in the Matt Franco Theater at The Link. And last but not least, Gabriella Versace, an outstanding singer who's performed in countless shows on the Strip, including most recently starring in Sexy the Show at Westgate. She has a new show that is a tribute to Liza Minnelli, Barbara Streisand, Aretha Franklin, Judy Garland, Cher, and other iconic female performers, and it's happening at the Vegas Room on East Sahara Friday and Saturday. Another amazing dinner show to go to at thevegasroom.com. That's going to do it for this week's Sun on the Strip. Thank you so much for joining me, and special thanks to John Caparulo for taking time to talk comedy and more this week. You can see his show coming up soon at The Space. You can also check out his videos and all the other stuff he's been working on at johncaparulo.com. You can find past episodes of this show at lasvegassun.com/podcast. You can also listen and subscribe to The Sun on the Strip on Apple Podcasts. Hey, I'm going on vacation. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to get out of town for a little bit. It's been a long time since I've been able to do that. So I will be back with a new episode and a new interview on May 19th. See you then.